Ciao ragazzi, welcome to another episode of Diavolo Toscano, the best podcast in Tuscany. I'm your host, Luke Gamrot, and today my special guest is Jeleni. Hello, Jeleni.
Hello.
I'm so sorry because your surname is so difficult for me because I'm Polish and I've never been in abroad, so you know my tongue is not used to use it. So if you can help us, that's going to be very helpful.
Sure. My full name is Jeleni Balasubramanian.
You can see? You can see? Thank you. But you came from USA?
Yes.
From New York?
Yes.
So you're a New Yorker?
I'm sort of a New Yorker, yeah.
I hear that New Yorkers from time to time are assholes. Is it true?
New Yorkers are very direct.
Okay, like Polish guys.
Yeah, actually, yeah.
So if you feel uncomfortable, just...
I'll smash
me in the face.
Great. Okay.
Well, but how you can see, today is like a different setup because we are on Podere Borsemi. It's a beautiful place. It's the heart of La Baldi residence in Montegiovi. So thank you and big grazie for Valentina, who just hosted us. And today, after our conversation, after our interview, we're gonna be like great dinner, one of the best food in whole Tuscany. So guys, excuse me because I try to hurry up because I'm really hungry and I want to eat it. You're an artist, like another artist who just came from big world to the small world, like to the Montegiovi. So what was your first impress like when you saw so small town in the middle of nowhere and you compare it to the New York? So what was your first thing?
Actually, in the last several years, I've spent a lot of time in small towns or villages or even very, very remote places generally, some of which weren't even towns. I find that that's where I tend to do some of my best creative work when everything else is a little bit more quiet and I can find some interior space. I think arriving in Montegiovi, it is strikingly beautiful. Is very joyful arriving here. It immediately put a smile on my face. Landscape feels somehow at once sculpted and organic, which is a sort of really beautiful combination. There's clearly human work and aesthetic that has gone into shaping what you see, some of which is an outcome of agriculture and some of which is an outcome of kind of aesthetic practice. And it's working with the land itself. It's the kind of artfulness that really appeals to me that is working with its context. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel like it's trying to create its own special space and create distance. I think that was an immediate thing that I felt and noticed of the space. I also particularly respond to elevation and topography and shapes. Did a project a few years ago that was largely about water and gravity and how water moves, and water moves downhill. When I walk through a space now, I am constantly thinking about the way that water is moving.
Okay.
This is a really cool place to sort of notice the places that water moves. So those are some of the things that struck me when I first got here.
Thank you. And that's surprising that people just couldn't screw it up, like they that's surprising, like,
yeah.
You know, they had a lot of opportunity to do that here, and
for sure,
you know, because the landscape, like the agriculture here, the olive trees, everything is like, that's money, you know, they are living from that, and they didn't screw it up, like, that's surprising.
It's very beautiful.
It's leading us to the thing that maybe there is something in Italians that they just don't let them to do that. What was the biggest difference, what you can notice here but in the people than in USA, for example?
I've lived in parts of the United States in which people from one part somewhat dislike people from the other part, like parts between which there's antagonism. Mm-hmm. So have experienced a lot of different kind of like American lifestyles. I'd say that something that this region has in common with more of the American South is a much more lush and easy sense of time. More of the coasts, you find an adherence to clock time and to schedulings and agendas and, you know, getting things done. Here I felt both in the people I spent time with and the landscape as a whole, more diaphanous or loose sense of time.
That could be the conclusion that reality, has got a big impact to who we are.
Yep.
Because from time to time we like to think that we create the reality. It's like a tenure in philosophy. What's yours? What do you think? Like, is it possible that we can change the reality because what we are thinking? Our opposite way is much more bigger impact.
A friend of mine who does another podcast recently asked me what I think the strangest thing about reality is. And I feel like ever since I was a child, the strangest thing I felt about reality is the idea of being an individual, that there are individual entities or things inside a reality. And I always sort of doubted that basic premise. And I say that because you're asking me, do I affect my reality more? Does my reality affect me more? And I actually think that there isn't a boundary between those two things. I actually feel a kind of continuity between myself and the rest of what you would call reality, if I think on a philosophical level about that question.
It's like running circle, like the micro cycle, and you're involving it, and the big, like macro cycle. And they can work together, like, you know, in one mechanism. It's depend when you focus your attention, when you try to look at, then you can make another conclusion. How big impact it has for your art, for example?
To me, there are two aspects to this question. In terms of my art being a kind of labor, how my context affects that labor. For me, when I'm in generally slower and smaller spaces, I find it, small is the wrong word, where the kind of human population is smaller, because this is actually quite a big place. It's just that the human society here is smaller than the human society in New York City. So when I'm in a place with fewer people around and more distance from my eyes, like when I can see farther on a horizon, I find that I'm able to do better, very inner and reflective and creative work. I can write better, I can think better, I can sketch better.
Why? What is the reason?
I think it's the sense of quiet that permeates me, and again, that loosening of time. Conversely, I get worse at some aspects of my job. I'm worse at video conferences and phone calls all of a sudden. I get very slow at email. Okay. And it's not a conscious thing. It's actually that I'm shifting gears. I'm getting worse at this thing so that my brain and my heart can really be in this other space for a while. And that has happened to me every time I've shifted context from kind of a big city to more kind of natural setting. The other way that context affects my art is that it becomes metabolized into the work that I create. I'll move from a very direct example to a more abstract example. So as a direct example, my partner and I spent a lot of time on the west coast of the United States in various sort of national parks and mountains last year. Some of those places and settings made their way into my novel because they were places of such extreme beauty, and they were also correct for what my character was going through. So that was a very direct way that my context then became part of something I was creating. But the other way that my context becomes part of what I'm creating, one part of my artistic work is written work. And then I also build experiences, sometimes theatrical experiences, sometimes more kind of new media or visual art-based experiences, and sometimes a hybrid. When I'm doing that, I'm thinking very carefully about my audience. To me, observing people and their needs and where they are at also makes its way into how I generate my work. What am I seeing and hearing in people around me in a particular place that helps me then design experiences for people of that place, or adapt something that I've already made for people of that place? And sometimes it's in very simple ways, like changing the language in which the work is presented, but sometimes it's in more radical ways that I'll change something.
For example?
I created this installation, this immersive piece recently that we premiered last year. It was very delayed because of COVID. Project changed a lot during COVID because originally the design of the experience included much more touch and contact. Mm-hmm. Touch as a medium of contact and speaking to each other and listening directly as a medium of contact. And as we were getting closer to premiering, we knew that was not possible, both because nobody would show our work if it depended on that, and because our audience was rightfully scared to do that kind of work. So we had to think about, how do we bring about emotional and spiritual connection between our audience members without relying on that touch medium? So that was a quite radical change in the piece. And so now there's no such contact between audience members.
How do you manage that? Language?
So it's through language, it's through music, and there are moments in the piece. Actually, every time we've presented the installation, several people have come up to us and asked, like, oh, did you, because the text includes some direct instruction for you to look up or interact or engage with this art object that we created in a particular way. And people often ask us if we hired someone to enter at a particular time because it bounced off their experience in a certain way. But that was just another audience member entering in at that particular time.
Okay.
So what we did was create a piece with a lot of space for serendipity. I guess it's actually that same combination of organic and sculptural and devised and natural. That's the place that really calls and appeals to me.
Okay.
Is where you design and you're very thoughtful about it, and there's enough space for surprise and process to happen and bring something very special to the piece. And that piece had an astronomical basis. It was based on some research that an astrophysicist collaborator of mine did. It's her primary research. I really strive, because I mostly work with things of the natural world, whether they are stars or black holes or trees or water or animals, to maintain that same space for surprise and emergence that the natural world has. Like, that's one of the most delightful things about the natural world, right? Is that things can happen and then suddenly you're looking up and something's happening in front of you. I was actually presenting that work that I was just telling you about in California recently, and all the audience members were inside in this beautiful space experiencing the work. I was actually just sitting outside on a rocking chair, as I didn't have to do anything. And I was looking at the sun, looking out towards the sun, and the music from the installation was playing. And I was just watching a bird go by and do loops for maybe 2 hours. That's all that I was doing. But it is one of the most beautiful things that happens when we allow the dance between the planned and the unexpected to really dance and flow, and for one to not kind of dominate the other. That moment needed that to be happening, my audience to be in that room, that music to be playing, my composer to have created this beautiful, beautiful piece of music.
Astrophysics say it's synchronized.
Yeah, so it's exactly. Synchronized. And then for me to just be open to sitting and receiving whatever happens.
It's not that often when we speak with an artist, especially writers, that they can admit that they follow their audience needs. They are actually thinking what my audience would think. When I ask a lot of writers about that, they told me, no, that's my creation, and my audience just have fake opportunity to meet with my brilliant art. For me, it's like what needs to be done. if you go on that way and you want to be a writer, serious writer, you know that it's not like just touch of the gut in your head, maybe somewhere, someone, maybe the, some kind of geniuses, maybe, but mostly it's like hard work, and you need to be prepared, you need to prepare all that setup, like we spoke about that, like describing of the reality, what you are writing, characters, and full ecosystem of your, you know, story. And that part, like to understand who is your audience, who's your focus group, if we can use that marketing language, it's one of the most important thing, because if you finally understand who's your audience, what kind of language, what kind of tools, what kind of things you want to use, and on the other hand, what you really need to tell them to interest your audience. And it's very, very important, and I want to ask you to describe it a little bit more. Is it natural for you, or is it like something with a different approach, and you notice that kind of approach for within other authors?
I think my approach to this in part emerges from the fact that writing is something that I deeply care about, and it's literary work is not my only craft, and designing work that is more immersive or participatory means you necessarily think about your audience more. The things I create are completed in relationship with the audience. The audience is not
just receiver,
invading party, or passive recipient. They're often a quite active participant in the work. I'm pretty sensitive to my environment, and sometimes that can be very overwhelming for me, but it also means that I think I'm pretty good at intuiting how my audience members will feel at a very body and somatic level in relation to my work. And that's the level at which I find myself making art, is that's the place that I want to see transformation.
What's your process of doing that? Like, do you have some like special attitude, or you've got something like a special tool before you start writing? You ask the question for your audience. What's you prepare some workshop with potential audience? What's the process?
Every work is totally different, and some works need more testing, and some works don't need as much kind of testing or feedback. Actually, a tradition that's much stronger in Europe than the United States is dramaturgy.
Yeah,
you all have definitely worked with dramaturgs. In the US, people don't work with dramaturgs as much, but the purpose of a dramaturg is to think about the space of transition between the vacuum of the creative process and the reality and the exposure of the stage or the page or the space of encounter for the real world. Something very cool that many dramaturgs do is articulate the question, what is the audience experiencing in this moment? And then, what is the audience experiencing in this moment? Okay. And then, what is the audience experiencing in this moment? What is this moment doing? What is this moment doing? What is this moment doing? And continuing to probe the function of something, not just ask why should it be there, but for me to get really clear and specific as to this is the purpose of this, and then this is the purpose of this, I think helps me move it out of the space of I'm so smart and everyone should experience my brilliance, and into the space of I want to make something that's genuinely of service to some other human beings in some way. And for that reason, I want to get really clear about the purpose and how the different logics of the work are then assembled together. What's the arc of it in that sense? I think that's the big picture way, I think through that question that you asked, and then with every project, how you do that looks extremely different.
Ask for the question, why? Why are you doing that? Yeah, like it's very important to ask yourself every single time. It's like one of the best exercises, you know, in the life also. Like if you don't know something, just try to ask why, and then you have some answer. What you from time to time don't like, but it's the right answer. You sound like a guy who have got a lot of self-conscience about what you are actually doing and wanting to do.
Mm.
It was like that from the beginning, or that was something what just was born in some part of your life?
I feel like I had an intuition from when I was very young as to the kinds of things I wanted to do, but I didn't know materially how to do those things in the world I grew up in until, you know, years of more experience and learning, working with new people. I mean, one thing I said many years ago was, as an artist, I want to work very closely with communities of scientists.
Oh.
And I didn't know any artists who were working that way, but it was something that I kept saying, and I had this intuition and inkling that there was something deeper and more exciting to me to be found in not working with scientists superficially, not just saying, hey, can you give me some science? I'll make some art out of it. Okay. But actually building a relationship where mm-hmm. we're responsible to each other in some way. Mm-hmm. And there's a shared understanding that we're trying to discover questions that don't live neatly in art or science, but okay. live in some cool and interesting other space. That was an intuition I had so many years ago, and then kind of frog hopped my way through a variety of opportunities till I was able to make that happen. And that's what I do. Okay. And now that's what I do. And I've done it for many years, and I see the incredible real benefit and peace that it's brought to my life. So I guess the concise answer to your question is, I think I've always had a hunch about my purpose. I didn't know how to carry it out for a long time. And now I think, on that path.
I really want to know something about the newest project, like the book about octopus. Please tell me, because when you mentioned that you like to work deeply in the scientist, and now also I heard a little bit about the book, please tell us a little bit more about the process of working and what is the purpose of this book.
The book is the story of a friendship, and I wanted to explore grief, death, and relationships. That's the sort of central focus of the book. I also wanted to work with some of my favorite settings, which are the ocean and outer space. And I wanted it to be a work set in the past, partly because making a work of art is a reason to learn interesting, cool new stuff you didn't know before. And so there's a lot of research, historical research and scientific research that went into the crafting of this book, and is going into the crafting of this book. And that's part of the joy of the process for me, is learning about and being able to craft a multi-sensory picture of that period in time and of the ocean, land, and outer space settings of the book.
So what is the main story of that book? Like, it's like octopus from the space?
Without giving away the full arc.
Yeah.
So I would say the book is about one character making a very significant request of another character.
Okay.
And the arc of the book is that second character carrying it out.
The last question, after your 2 or 3 weeks being in Monte Giovi, being on the La Valle residence and here in Tuscany, what's like one big thing what you want to left for the people from here?
I would say I'm really grateful for everything that I learned here, and I will be back.
He will be back.
I will be back.
Thank you, Gennady. That was a pleasure. That was a pleasure. And see you guys for the next episode on Diavolo Toscano. Luke Gamrod was your host. Subscribe, like, and we are going to eat something great. Ciao.